Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
On The Advertising Show, hour number one, Ray Schillins, along with Brad Forsythe. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. There's also a great place to go online for The Advertising Show. It's theadvertisingshow.com. And that is where we archive past shows. We have a bunch of great media information on the site. We also accept your questions, comments, only if they're good, at theadvertisingshow.com.
And financial donations.
Do we do that too?
Well, we'll work on that.
You know, that's not actually a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. Are we soliciting?
Not-for-profit charity.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. This is a Big Radio Midgets production, and that, of course, makes it a class A production. And we've got a great guest coming on today. Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman and chief creative officer of Kirschenbaum, Bond and Partners. And the book is called, hold the book up there so they can see it.
Well, let's look at it. It's Under the Radar, talking to today's cynical consumers.
There are no cynical consumers.
Well, this was written several years ago, so we're going to figure out what the word is that when you go beyond cynical.
Postal.
10X, yeah. Exactly.
Something like that.
Hey, I have a gift for you, by the way.
Do you really?
Right there.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah. Squeeze this. Hey, Whipple, squeeze this.
That's
Luke Sullivan.
Great.
We had him
on
the show a few weeks ago, and you asked for an extra copy, and Wiley was kind enough to send out another review copy. And, of course, when you get it after the guest has appeared, I guess it's not a review copy anymore.
No, it's a comp copy.
Post-mortem, yeah. So, anyway, I brought that in.
That on your income statement.
Brought that in for you. Hey, Whipple, squeeze this. And I got to tell you, if you're listening and you want to read a great book on advertising, Hey, Whipple, squeeze this by Luke Sullivan. I recommend it.
So that donation just became a paid commercial.
Well, I gave him a plug for as a result of that.
No, that's nice. And he's a great guy.
You know, it's interesting because Richard's book is also on Wiley.
Is it really?
We're going to have to start sending them an invoice. Don't you think?
Richard's book is also a hardcover, too.
Yeah.
And it weighs more.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be more.
Well, we're going to have to ask him on the cover who's the shoes there that we see.
That could very well be his shoes.
Yeah.
They are. He's well-dressed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Probably they're Cole Haan shoes, wouldn't you say? I bet they are.
Well, they could be.
I bet they are. We've got Patrick Meyer, Fusion 5, coming up here this quarter hour. Why don't we do that, and then we'll get to this next step here. So listen carefully here on The Advertising Show.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's The Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Integrated marketing, fact or fiction, a topic that everybody talks about. But let's see how you do on this quiz. What is integrated marketing? A singular look and message throughout everything you do. B, a series of touch points all around your consumers. C, none of the above. D, all of the above. Answer? E, none of those answers. Some of the above with one missing element, an element that's critical to smart CMOs. It's brand growth drivers. This is where you lose most agencies and many marketers. It's about what drives your business day in, day out. What are the 5 to 6 things that will drive your business going forward? Let me give you an example. In soft drinks, there are a handful of drivers. The first is the badge, the image of that can with that bottle and what it stands for. Next, brand news value. Innovative packaging, innovative secondary package, brand new advertising, a whole series of brand bits of news value. Next is the channels, the right package within arm's length, at the right price, ice cold, selling more product. The last area is overall awareness of a compelling message for your brand and word of mouth that's generated around that message. Those are the growth drivers, the handful of things that you have to do to drive the business. So let me ask you this. As you focus on doing integrated marketing, are you doing touch points and communication? Or are you focused on 360 degrees, the growth drivers?
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
Thank you very much, Patrick, on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest today, Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman and chief creative officer at Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners. And we'll have Richard on here in just a little while. Well, this half hour, we've got the wacky world of marketing coming up. We've also got, what'd you say, good
yeah.
advertising?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do the advertising showcase a little bit later on.
Right.
And if you get you stick around for the second hour, of course, you're going to hear more from Richard, and you'll also hear from Mary Lou Quinlan,
mm-hmm.
who is a good friend of Richard's
and she's
as well.
A great marketer. If you ever wondered how to market to women,
she would be the one to talk to, right?
Exactly. Well, her website, it's What Women Want, and I keep saying to you every time we run that vignette, Ray, if we ever figured that out.
Well, we're doing okay.
Our life would be a lot.
No, it never will be.
No.
Never will be, Brad. Never will be.
Ray, I don't know if you saw this, but Queer Eye Teams is apparently planning to do a little version of what they do. But they're going to do it for a little more attention to the ladies.
Are they really?
Yeah, it's a great
nice.
Creators of Bravo hit Queer Eye for the Straight Guy are turning their attention to the female market. NBC's Queer Eye producer Scout Productions has agreed to develop Gal Pals.
Gal Pals?
Gal Pals. Now, you might think where I'm going with this is in a direction that is not what I thought it was
Gutter?
Going to be.
Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I thought lesbians, but it's not going to be that.
That's what I thought, yeah.
It's going to be syndicated in fall of 2004. The half-hour series would follow another team of five gay men with expertise in fitness, hair, and clothing who would help women spice up their image.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a different take on that. I thought when I first saw that, I thought lesbians helping shy, timid women and, you know, coming out of their shell and learn how to wear, I don't know, flannel?
Oh,
I'm guessing.
Don't say that.
Or be a little more, tough? I don't know.
Hey, there's a great show on called What Not to Wear. Have you ever seen that show?
Mm-hmm.
It was a BBC America show, and now we've got an American version of that show.
Well, interesting? That's where we get a lot of this stuff.
That's where we get most of our shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that sounds similar to what you're talking about there.
NBC, it mentions also in this article from Television Week, TVWeek.com, that NBC is also cleared a Jane Pauley talk show for the fall, next fall. And according to sources, the stations along the NBC network are also likely to renew the Ellen DeGeneres show next month.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you seen that show?
No. I see a version of it on Oxygen. I don't know if it's the same thing or not. It must be.
It's the same thing.
It must be.
Yeah, it is the same thing.
Because, of course, of the common ownership there.
Right, exactly.
But, yeah, I've seen it, and it's all right. It's okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't see it hanging around for a long time, though, that's for sure.
Well, and let's see. What else did I – another – speaking of talk shows, Tony Danza is going to have a talk show for Buena Vista Television.
Is he really?
Expected in fall 2004. And John Cleese, I really like this, host of – he's going to be hosting a Food Network special.
Now, that would be worthwhile watching.
I love the title. John Cleese on Wine for the Confused. And that's slated for next fall. So that should be fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, anything Cleese does is good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Kirschenbaum on the way. We've got to take a break here for some commercials. You know, those wonderful things that sell product.
You mean like advertising?
Yeah, advertising.
Okay.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I've heard that works from time to time.
Well, sometimes.
Executed properly.
That's true.
With the right message.
It's important.
Richard Kirschenbaum on the way, Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners. And we'll talk to Richard in just a moment on the Advertising Show. This is Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. Remember, our website, TheAdvertisingShow.com is the place you can send your questions in, and we'll answer them. We absolutely will. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Colgate toothpaste, the tooth toughener. How can that be? Well, it contains advanced MFP fluoride. It's the only toothpaste that does, and it does toughen tooth enamel. With tougher enamel, the children won't have so many cavities. It's that simple.
There's a spot for Colgate, something that we heard... Well, if you were around that time.
I wasn't.
Arthur.
Well, Arthur,
sure
Arthur Godfrey.
Arthur Godfrey. I was around that.
Oh,
sure
I heard it
you.
Through my mother's stomach.
No, you're old.
She used to put the headphones there.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, that's how I got into radio.
There you go. Hey, we have Richard Kirschenbaum on the show today. Richard is co-chairman and chief creative officer at Kirschenbaum Bond & Partners. Let me tell you a little bit about Richard before we bring him on, all right? He is one of the few entrepreneurs in the advertising business today who combines a rare business acumen with a widely respected creative reputation. Those are two good things to have. From Kenneth Cole to Snapple to Coach and Target, Kirschenbaum Bond & Partners creative network has grown with its clients to over $600 million in billings, offices in New York and San Francisco. The creative network includes the public relations and promotional company Lime, its media arm, Media Kitchen, and Glue Connect. These are great names, an internet and direct mail agency. So, Richard, it is so good to have you on the advertising show this weekend. You are in New York today, right?
I'm right here in the Big Apple.
All right.
In Manhattan. So where are your offices there in Manhattan for those that are familiar?
Well, we're actually, if you want to know the truth, we're downtown, very close to the World Trade Center, mm-hmm. which, of course, has been somewhat trying over the last 2 years. But
I hear it's coming back.
Bouncing back a little bit, yeah.
And Ray was mentioning the internet arm. I show Dot Glue over here.
It's Dot Glue. It's called Dot Glue, yeah.
It is?
It was a typo, yeah.
Okay. Well, and there you go. It's a good reason to always use a Word document when typing this, because then you can make
exactly.
your corrections, Ray. Anyway, that's for Stephanie Saratelli, our associate producer. We'll give her hell about that, Ray, when we get off the air.
Please.
But I wanted to ask you, since it is unusual, I must say, Richard, and give me your take on this, for a creative person to have some sense of business. Usually the better the creative person is, the less sense they have for business. Would you not agree?
You know something, that's been a very big issue of mine, because I truly, there's truth to that, although I sort of want to break that myth. Mm. And I feel strongly about it, because I think creative generally is undervalued in business terms. And of course, today, content and is so important, and I think that agencies, on the most part, give away their ideas for free. And, we have to value them more. So I think I forced myself to become a businessman.
Well, you know, you and I were talking off the air, and Ray, about a dear friend, George Lois, and certainly an icon in the business. And back in his day, back in the 60s and 70s, I think the big idea was more valued than as it is today, don't you think?
Of course. I mean, George was one of my mentors, is one of my mentors. I think he's, you know, unbelievable, and he's still going strong. And I think that George, of course, was one of the pioneers, because he founded his own agency, and he, I think he was one of the first great creative entrepreneurs. And so I've always tried to follow in his very large footsteps.
Do you think that big ideas back in those days were more accepted by clients, and the difficulty in getting clients to take risks today? Is that something you bump up against much?
I think for the most part, the economy has, you know, certain limitations on the creative process. But I think, you know, George's time, the whole creative revolution was very interesting. And I think people were willing to take more risks. And also people were less literate about advertising and marketing in general. So people looked at people like George as being the specialist, and, you know, almost in a certain sense as, would you question your doctor? And most people generally wouldn't. But most, you know, the average consumer certainly behaves like they are in focus groups, you know, 24/7. And I think it, you know, most clients also have marketing degrees. So I think that the agencies have been somewhat compromised, and the creative process has become somewhat compromised by all the pseudo creatives running around out there telling us what we need to be doing.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't agree with you more. From what we can tell here on the show, when we interview people that are on the client side or the agency side, it seems those that are willing to take a little bit of a risk typically are those that have the greatest benefit. And I think some examples of that would be Aflac, Nike, you know, there are many
good examples.
Yeah, many examples out there of great advertising. You know, your book, Under the Radar, was published back in 98, which means I guess you and your co-author wrote it, maybe, I guess, in 97. The subtitle of your book is Talking to Today's Cynical Consumer. So 6 years later, how cynical is the consumer?
Much more cynical and much more jaded and much more interesting in many ways.
It's going in that direction, isn't it? It's not changing.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, is there anything in your book, and I did have a chance to to read almost all of it. I tend to be honest in that regard. But is there anything in your book that you would change today from having written it some 6 years ago?
No, nothing. I think the book stands as a very, very good marketing tool. I just think that there are certain changes in the industry, as an example, which are trend-related, and we do ongoing trend reports with our clients. But, for example, did you know that between, just as an example, that between the ages of 13 and 16, more hair care now, is in terms of hair color, is sold to young boys than to girls?
That's
so, you
weird.
Know, in a certain sense, would that have been true 10 years ago? No.
Right.
But I think that, you know, when you take a look at the cultural icons, people like Eminem, people who, you know, it's no longer considered to be effeminate to color your hair, and I think young kids now are doing it, and it certainly has application for products and for trending, and it's something that we all need to be, you know, take a look at and be keep up to date with.
You know, I couldn't. Yeah, I agree. The back to the cynical consumer, Richard. The you know, I see a lot of commercials on television today, and it seems like in a lot of cases, I won't say all, in a lot of cases, the main objective of the spot is to get the consumer's or the viewer's attention, and sometimes it is so focused on getting attention, it really doesn't deliver the message for the advertiser. And I'm wondering if the cynical consumer today and the drive of an agency creative to want to get the attention of the consumer has maybe become too much of a focus and they lose sight of delivering a value message to the consumer?
Well, we're still in a business, and we're still in a business that, at least I'm in a business, a creative business, that tries to sell our clients' products, goods, and services, and do it in a creative way that is appropriate to the brand. And so, you know, it's wonderful to create, you know, fantastic, humorous, memorable advertising, but if you walk away from it and you don't remember what the brand is, you haven't done your job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting back to when I started in the business as well, I view what I do as a craft. I'm a craftsman at what I do. Essentially, I started out as a copywriter, and I learned from one of the great copywriting legends of all time, also very much in George Lois's league, which is a woman who is no longer living. Her name is Lois Corey, and Lois had her own agency, Corey Kay, and she taught me the craft of copywriting, and I learned how to write radio commercials, and I learned how to write advertising. And, you know, I think with clients today, it's very important to, you know, dialogue with them and have them understand that what you do is as much of a craft as going to a plastic surgeon or have, you know, speaking with your architect or designer or, you know, your accountant. I mean, it's a craft, and it's something that I've went to school for. I take great pride in what I do. And I think consumers are generally cynical because there's a lot of bad advertising out there, and there are a lot of bad people doing it.
So how much of your job is selling creative concepts to clients?
Oh, I mean, essentially all of what I do is that, but I don't view it as selling. I hate the word selling,
you know,
anything to my clients.
I couldn't agree more, and I call it communication. I want to delve into that, but we're getting ready to take a break, and we'll talk more about that on the other
side.
On the show today, it's Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman and chief creative officer of Kirschenbaum Bond & Partners. You know, his partner's name is John Bond. John Bond.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, there we go. I like that. Instead of James, okay? There we go. And we got the Wacky World of Marketing coming up in just a minute here, and we got more on the way, too. We'll have some good advertising, the advertising showcase at the close to the top of the hour. So if you stay with us, we promise a good time will be had by all here on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to South Carolina, where in Harleyville, South Carolina, the town limit signs have disappeared from the same spot for the fourth time in 5 years. And town officials think they know who has the signs. Harley-Davidson fans. A motorcycle shop owner says swiping Harleyville signs, which have been spotted as far away as Florida, is a point of pride among some bikers. I've seen them coming with a beer in one hand and a sign in the other, like I'd given them a brownie point or something, he says. How's that for brand loyalty? And that, my friends, is the Wacky World of Marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
What is this, a sleepwalking concert? Where's your last your jam? Come on, kid. Wake up.
Thanks.
I needed that. What a great line. Classic spot in the Advertising Show with Ray Schillings, along with Brad Forsyth and our special guest, Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman and chief creative officer of Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners. Back on the radio with Richard.
Yeah, Richard, welcome back. Right before the break, we were talking about selling concepts. And, you know, I remember fresh out of college years ago, I read a lot of the sales books that were out at that time, and I would go out and practice what I'd read, and I was terrible at it because I tended to look at it as a technique. And once I dropped the concept of selling and decided it's really just communication, I really got really, you know, very good at it, frankly. And I think you were touching on the fact that you didn't like the word selling your concepts and so forth. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I hate the idea of myself being in a meeting and selling what I do, because I think selling has this, that someone has to then therefore be convinced to buy it. You know, people always ask me, how do you sell great work? And I believe truly that it's about trust. If a client trusts you and you build trust with a client, they will very often buy something from you. I have a great anecdote about that. Many years ago, we had a very small client, St. Laurie Suits, and it's in our book. And we tried to get the client to buy this ad very, very for a long time. And the headline said, dress British, think Yiddish. And they just wouldn't do it. They thought it was possibly offensive. I thought it was actually
genius, right?
Kind of a fun and complimentary ad as well. And it was for a suit company. And the client finally, to make a long story short, went into surgery. And right before he was being wheeled in, he asked his wife to come over to the gurney, and she said, yes, yes, what is it? Because he was donating a kidney, and he said, run the ad. And, you know, the funny thing is that that story wasn't about because I had to convince him to do it. It's in every meeting we'd sort of laughingly and jokingly bring up the ad, and I'd say, you know, it's so fun, and, you know, I understand why you wouldn't maybe want to run it, but I think I'd always just bring it up as a joke, and at the end, he just wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I agree with you. I think it's a great concept, and you know, it again reiterates the point we were talking about earlier in the hour about clients and taking risk and so forth. And risk do not have to be, I mean, just way out there. It can be something that's just a bit out of the ordinary. And you know, a lot of the great ideas that we see out there today don't seem so risky on the other side. You know?
Well, I think a lot of them are in many ways are taking cheap shots or false. I mean, people are pushing the envelope in ways that are just tasteless. I mean, I think that everything we do, and we've certainly had the reputation of doing a lot of work that's been controversial, I always think that it has to be, you know, there has to be a level of taste as well, and a sense of humor, sense of wit, you know, within the concept and how something is executed. And I always tell my clients in advance, you know, are you prepared to, you know, if you want something that's going to stand out, do you want a certain level of controversy? Can you deal with someone calling up and writing a letter that they may not like it? And if so, don't, you know, do it. But if you want to create a difference and you want to stand out, then that's what happens when you run something that's out of the ordinary, both positive and negative.
Mm-hmm. And let's move on in another direction here. What's the best advice, Richard, that you ever received from a fellow ad person, and who gave it to you?
Okay. The best advice I ever received, and this is true, and it sounds corny, but it's not, was from a former client of mine who's now retired, whose name was Penn Cavanaugh, who ran Shefflin in Somerset. And he said to me, Richard, you know, I'll tell you something. He said, I have a motto in which we run our firm, which was an importing company. And he said, you know, with brands like Hennessy and Moet and Chandon, et cetera. And he said, take care of the brands, and they'll take care of you. And what he was saying was, always do what's right for the client. Always do what's right for the brand. And if you do that, and you act with integrity, and you are, and you do what's right for the brand, you know what? Then you will get the feedback, you will get the credit, you will get the success. But you have to put it out there first for the client, and look out for them first. And that's been my motto, and it's been very successful. I mean, it's an old-fashioned way of doing business, but the fact is that we need more of that.
I think if you let the driver be what's best interest of the client or the product or the brand, you're always going to make the right decision, right?
Of course. And so many people try to do things for their self-interest and their best interest. And I always go into a meeting with my clients, and I will always do what's in their best interest. Of course, I have my standards in terms of what I think is good, and what I think is in their best interest is doing great creative work. Mm-hmm. So it's not selling out by any stretch of the imagination.
We have about a minute left here, Richard. What do you think the creation of a great ad can be boiled down to, a formula or a sequence of steps that one goes through during the creative process?
Yes, you first have to know everything, and then you can break them. It's sort of the craft. There's a craft to understanding how a piece of advertising works. But again, you can break all the rules and prove that, disprove that. But for the most part, there are steps, and there's a craft to the way to do a fantastic ad. I just think that, you know, then when you know it, you can break all the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Ray, that Richard just said what Chuck McBride, who was last week's guest, who is creative director at TBWA, Shite Day, and I asked him the same question, and I think his words were something like, I may not be able to tell you the formula of developing the creative, but I can tell you once it all gets out on the table what you have to take away to be left with some great concepts and great ideas. We're going to take a break, and we'll do that in just a little bit more in a second.
Well, I think it's a good idea, Brad.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that?
Why don't we?
On the Advertising Show, Richard Kirschenbaum, our special guest today with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and we'll come back in just a minute with more.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads before.
Standing on the corner, watching all the Fords go by. Standing on the corner, giving all.
I don't think Richard can hear that spot, but it's a classic one for Ford, the Four Lads. My goodness, that was before your time, right, Brad?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Grecian formula thing's working good for you, pal.
Oh, man.
On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, our special guest is Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman of Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners. By the way, their website, simple, kb.com.
Yeah.
You know, KBG.com. You go there, that's something different.
Yeah, builders. They have those down here. I want to give you a chance to plug your company a little bit by asking you this question, Richard. What distinguishes your ad agency from others you compete with?
It's a great question, and we certainly have a differentiating point of view. And if we didn't, we shouldn't be in business.
Right.
And there are a lot of agencies that don't, so which is troubling as well.
Oh, really?
We are the mothers of invention. That's what our strategy is. We invent brands and we reinvent them. So from brands like Snapple or Coach or Kenneth Cole, which were in the days we started working with them, we helped invent those brands from a public point of view to, let's say, brands like Target and Revlon and now the Andrew Jergens company. I mean, we're being asked to help, or Meow Mix, we're being asked to reinvent those brands. And that's what we do best. And, you know, it could be something like, you know, bringing back Meow Meow Meow, the jingle, and doing it in a contemporary way, or bringing back helping Revlon bring back Unforgettable, the whole idea of that. I mean, or it could be something as interesting and as different as creating a new store for Delta Song, actually, instead of an ad, creating a store in Soho, which is sort of a hip downtown area of Manhattan. Those are the things that we're most proud of.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, since you mentioned Meow Mix and the jingle, we had Jerry Delafamina on the show a while back, and, of course, he and his firm created that jingle, actually. And I think it says something for the origination of that idea, as well as the the shepherding of the brand along the way, that there's that in effect that jingle, a variation of that jingle, is still being used in today's advertising. Let's talk a little bit about content mm-hmm. and program development. I know your agency has a great example of this in Meow TV, but many of our listeners may not be familiar with that. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, of course, we brought back the jingle, and I love Jerry, by the way. I think he's amazing and a mentor as well. But I'll tell you about Meow TV. Meow TV was something that everyone's buzzing about right now, which is the idea of content. You know, how do brands get into content or creation of programming or entertainment? And so what we did was the strategy for Meow Mix is keeping cats happy, and we found out through research that a lot of people kept the TV on for their cats because they want to keep their cats happy. So we thought, why don't we do a show, an actual TV show for cats, the first TV show for cats? And I have to say that this is what's interesting about this is that it's not a show about cats, like a cat, the best home videos of cats. It's an actual show for cats. Mm-hmm. So it had to have a content that cats liked, which we call cat integrity programming. And it's running on Oxygen, and it's been a huge, huge success.
How difficult was it getting Oxygen to carry that, or is that paid programming? Or
no, they actually had to buy it as they would any other piece of content and programming, and we shopped it around, and there were certain networks that were interested in it and certain that weren't. So it was much like anyone else in Hollywood going around selling a real show. And I have to tell you, it was a fascinating, fascinating experience, and the agency, the client, and a production company that we hired, you know, helped produce Half-Baked Productions, helped produce the show. And it was a very interesting experience for all involved.
I may be putting you on the spot. When does it air on Oxygen here?
It's, let's see, you know what, I don't actually, you can check Oxygen, I don't actually have it running.
Maybe we'll have that next hour.
You have to have the psychographic on the cats to figure out when to place it?
Yeah, well, that's
exactly.
True.
Cats would be awake at night, so it's probably out at night, right?
What about the commercial breaks? Do you have an interesting group of advertisers for that, or Oxygen?
Yes, we do, actually. We've had, besides Meowmix, we have some other sponsors and on the show, and selling cat products and Hearts Mountain. And so it's been an exciting adventure.
Has Nielsen decided to create a new rating service for felines?
You know what? There's talk of it.
Well, I'm sure if there's an opportunity, they will take that.
They're measuring it in hairballs.
Yeah.
That also has the question, if that can happen, what can possibly be next?
I was reading
reptile TV?
I was reading about a cat product, cat food, I think it was.
Yeah.
Ray and I are dog people, and I mean that in the most sincere sense.
Yes, we do.
But there's some cat food that's out there that works to help cat ball problems.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Us.
Yeah.
Okay. We just launched it.
Oh, well, there
it is.
There you go. See, okay. I'm reading and I'm learning. And
this is amazing what you're learning.
We're passing this around, yeah.
We've got to take a break here on the Advertising Show. We'll be back with more. We've got the Advertising Showcase on the way next.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
You love Double Mint Gum. Double good, Double Mint Gum. Double fresh flavor.
This is the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. And you dated the Double Mint Twins in college, didn't you?
You know, there are no new ideas out there.
Yeah.
The guys that developed, or women, or whoever it was, that had developed the Coors Light Twins commercials,
right.
Well, they were listening to some old
Double Mint
spots probably.
Okay. Hey,
yeah.
Hey, why don't we do
hey,
that?
Hey, Twins. But I think those Twins back in the Double Mint days, a little more tame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they wore sweaters.
Okay.
Today, they just... whatever's underneath the sweater is what they wear.
We've got Richard Kirschenbaum back with us next hour. We're going to take a break from Richard, and we've got a couple more features this hour, as a matter of fact.
Did you see the Victoria's Secret program Wednesday night?
Nah.
Yeah, it was a great program. My wife said, remember the brunette and the blonde? I said, honey, I didn't get that high. Talk about the clothing, if you would. Hey, I don't know if you heard this real quickly before we get into the feature that you're about to punch there. When the voice recognition system used by the Shreveport Port Louisiana.
I'm going to press the button like this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
When the voice recognition system used by the Shreveport, Louisiana Police Department asked people to name the person or department they wanted,
they couldn't figure
the
it out.
The system couldn't understand due to their southern accent.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Apparently, the chief, Mike Campbell, says Louisiana has a problem, and it's what he calls lazy mouth.
Louisiana, well, they have a problem. Yeah, they do.
And thus the department made a switch over to a lower-tech touch-tone
system. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Wow. Well, that's like some of these voice recognition software things.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to work hard at saying the right words.
Well, it's kind of silly. I owned a cell phone, 10 years ago, maybe more, maybe longer, where it was actually connected to your car where you couldn't take it out of the car.
I remember those, yeah.
And it was one of the early voice recognition things, and I did all the voices and got it all plugged in, and I thought it was so cool that I had that phone. And then I'd be listening to the radio, and I'd look down, and I'd dialed someone because it was hearing the radio.
That's not
good. It was crazy.
There's a downside to technology, all technology.
Yeah.
Well, we've got the advertising showcase on the way. It's a look at the positive, good side of advertising, and we'll do it right
now. And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
Nice to have the good stuff every now and then, too. What do we got this week?
Well, it's kind of a strange piece here because I'm going to highlight something that a lot of people in the business already know about, but this past summer in Washington, D.C., the 61st Annual Obie Awards were handed out, which recognizes, of course, creative excellence in outdoor advertising. The winning campaign, which was a series of boards from the automotive category for Mini Cooper USA. I'm not sure that you saw it, but of course, I think most people have seen boards by Mini.
Yeah.
And, of course, you've seen it. We've talked about it here on the show.
Sure.
But for those that may not be familiar or need to have their memory jarred, for example, one board, as you can see here, has a nice side view of a Mini driving on the road. And in the upper left-hand corner, you see a copy line, Let's Motor. And in the upper right-hand corner, you see a Mini Cooper logo, and that's it. Obviously, this first board is the board that introduced Mini's tagline, Let's Motor. But, of course, and you might also know because you've seen their advertising, they use the tagline in all their advertising.
Well,
can you imagine
that?
Anyway,
that's important to know. Let's revisit that for a minute, too. Yeah, if you got something good going and you're doing print, or you're doing a magazine, or you're doing whatever, TV, radio,
integrate it throughout all your media. Another board features a silver Mini on a black background with the copy line 0% body fat, which I thought was a nice little piece.
Yeah, nice change.
And Let's Motor again with the Mini Cooper logo at the bottom of the board. Another board is a head-on shot of a Mini Cooper with a copy line, Sliced Bread sure had a good long run. And you get what they're saying there, right?
Yeah, right.
And again, just the copy line and the logo. All of this award-winning work, Ray, was produced, of course, we know, by our friends at Crispin Porter Bogusky. The series of boards I just described won Best of Show in the 2003 Obie Awards. But, of course, if you read any advertising trade publications, you already are aware that Crispin Porter has literally built an agency on the work that they've done for Mini Cooper.
Sure.
But I think the key here, the clever outdoor advertising that they have been able to develop and continue to develop for Mini Cooper, is the fact that they have been able to very quickly and succinctly, as well as memorably, create a nice execution that helps distinguish the Mini Cooper brand from any other vehicles in the compact import category. And I think without the work that Crispin Porter has developed for Mini Cooper, which, incidentally, they had a minuscule ad budget that they launched the product a few years ago.
That's something good to know, too. You don't need a big mega budget to do something good.
Oddly enough, sometimes the smaller budgets is where you get the more creative effort and the willingness to be a little more out there. But, you know, it could have been a failure without a lesser creative effort than coming out of Crispin. So instead, the small budget challenged the agency to come up with what is obviously an outstanding creative effort, and, you know, as they say, a great client is willing to take a risk with their advertising. They get great work out of their ad agency, and they both win. So hats off to Crispin Porter and Mini Cooper USA for a great example of how to effectively use outdoor.
And about the only thing we've left out is go buy the car.
Well, that's true.
We can do that. Hey, we've got Richard Kirschenbaum back for hour number two of the Advertising Show. We've also got Mary Lou Quinlan on the way. Let's see. Grown-up Women is her feature today.
Well, isn't that very timely this week with the Michael Jackson news outlet?
Yeah, can you believe that?
Yeah.
Whoa, baby.
Yeah.
Well, Neverland is taking on a whole new meaning,
well,
isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not going to let you over there at that Neverland place.
Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit online at advertisingage.com or actually adage.com. Next hour, two singing billboards. Did you hear about that?
No.
Okay, well, you will next hour. Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth back in just a few moments. This is a Big Radio Midgets production.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Yes, indeed. It's hour two of The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. My special guest today is Richard Kirschenbaum. Richard was with us last hour. If you were, you heard some great stuff, and you're going to hear more this hour coming up with Richard. Also got Mary Lou Quinlan on the way, and like we said, the Grown-Up Women is the feature today. Andy Borowitz, a feature from him, is on the way as well. And what else do we have?
Well, we have the Wacky World of Marketing.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. So that'll be at the bottom of the hour. So here we are back, and Richard joins us in about 8 minutes from now.
Yeah.
So,
and if you know, if you're out running around and you got to hear part of the interview last hour, or you missed it completely, theadvertisingshow.com.
Yes.
Archive page.
Well, how about that?
Click on, and you're there, baby.
Boy, are we technologically cool or what?
That's right. And if you have a mouse, pull it real tight, and it brightens the picture. No?
Just the antenna is what you got to do on that.
If I were to say David Guest, what would you say?
David Guest?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
You know, Liza's former.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
What?
Liza's countersuing the poor guy.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh,
she is.
He probably doesn't have two nickels to rub together anyway.
Soon to be ex-husband and former agent. Apparently, she's suing David for breach of contract, poor accounting practices, and breaking the law. According to an 11-page document, which you can see on The Smoking Gun.
Yes.
Minnelli is seeking at least $2 million in restitution, claiming Guest stole money from her, publicly insulted her, and then fired some of her staff. Now, I don't know about you, Ray, but is it just me, or did he publicly insult her when he kissed her during their wedding?
Possibly so.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I did.
I mean, there's nothing more exciting than grabbing your bride's head and, you know, at the altar, you know, putting a wet one on her right there and as her head's trying to be jerked back. And what are you doing here? You know, could you see that?
Yeah, that was bad. Liza's a sweet lady, by the way. We met her in Miami.
My brother met her in New York, and he said she is.
She gets around, doesn't she?
She's a very sweet person, and excuse me, has had a tough time of things. But I think, you know, I don't know about you, but when I saw that wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the couple there.
Yeah.
I thought, this is, you know, this ain't going to work.
No, we knew that up front.
But there were a lot of lawyers around there going, come on.
Do it.
Go with it.
Do it, yeah. It'll be interesting to follow that up.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll go stay at Neverland with Michael, okay? Yeah, right. Mary Lou Quillen on the way here on the Advertising
Show. Over it.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
What if I told you that you have a customer who is your wealthiest, most educated, most powerful prospect, and that you were ignoring her? How about hooking up with some women over 40? As a terrific writer at ad agency GSD&M once wrote, older women have bigger purses. This generation of women doesn't feel old. They don't think old, and they'd smack you upside the head if they knew how you purposely ignore them. Admit it, how many of your target audiences stop at age 34? And even if you pursue women 18 to 49, does that mean you think that the 2 million women who will turn 50 this year are now hurtling over the abyss toward death? Wrong. Creative Strategies describe the ideal young customer as bright, ambitious, stylish, confident. Many 40-plus-year-old women would use those same adjectives to describe themselves. It's not just the Botox and the Pilates that give her this feisty attitude. It's the way she's grown up her entire baby boomer life. One example of someone who gets it is Danny Myers, owner of the Union Square Cafe, a high-end restaurant in New York City. He noticed that many of his patrons were holding their menus farther from their faces. His hip solution? He got an upscale eyewear store in Manhattan to supply him with temporary reading glasses. His female customers are not only grateful, but heading in to buy the real thing afterwards. What a contrast to the typical old-fashioned ad approach of showing older women walking the beach mulling their acid reflux. If it helps you to think of 50 as the new 30, you might take a whole new look at your customer target. She's not grown old. She's just grown up.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Great advice from Mary Lou Quinlan here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. And our special guest on the way, Richard Kirschenbaum, Chief Creative Officer and Co-Chairman of Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners. And the book is called?
The book is called Under the Radar.
Under the stack of paper there you have.
Right. Okay. And, you know, Mary Lou could have punctuated her little story by way of saying she's going to boogie till her walker tips over. Don't you think?
She probably did that next time.
You know, if you're Alec Baldwin, your female demo stops at 24. Did you know he's got him a young one now?
Does he really?
Oh, yeah.
He's got him a young one. That's great. Mm-hmm. Hey, we talked about singing billboards. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had smoking billboards
scratch
before.
Scratch
and sniff billboards.
Right.
Singing billboards. Dozens of advertising boards in Paris's metro stations are singing cheerful slogans.
Paris Hilton?
No. What? Say Paris Metro.
Oh, there's a Paris Hilton.
No.
He's been in the news a lot lately.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
Go ahead.
Marzuki Samour. Samour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A shoemaker frowned as he walked past an ad at the opera station in central Paris, and a voice began chanting the name of the stereo company, Iowa, like an aria.
Okay.
An aria. Yeah, he says, that's rubbish, the 45-year-old commuter said. Looking at the cartoon character on the billboard from which the sound emerged, there's already too much noise in the subway. From some 150 billboards put up by Sony, the Iowa division, hidden voices sing out in country, boy band, and rap style, selling the things. They're in the tunnels.
Well, I was going to say that they're misusing the term as subway posters as opposed to billboards. Right,
they're calling them billboards,
yeah, right?
Right. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Well, that's interesting.
I think it's kind of a cool idea. Of course, you couldn't do that on a regular billboard. Nobody's here driving.
That's why it kind of threw me off there. I thought it could be a low hanging billboard on the sidewalk, but then, of course, again, if it's in the freeway, they said it's a test market thing.
Rather. Yeah, they said it's a test market thing, and they're just trying it for a week and see what happens. So.
Well, I think a week's too short.
Yeah, I think
if you're going to test something, you know, give it 30 days at least.
Yeah.
But don't interview that guy.
I don't know. I don't see why that's such a bad idea. It's a great idea, as a matter of fact.
I think it is. And, you know, maybe one day it'll be push this for more information, and there'll actually be people going up and saying, hey, I'm going to opt in. I'm going to push this. I want to hear more about, you know, whatever product it happens to be, as opposed to forcing your message on people today, which I think is a lot of the resistance that mm-hmm. people are getting, people that are advertisers trying to ram their message down people's throat.
True.
And of course, the web is working towards doing things where, you know, we'll send you more information because you've decided you were interested in this product.
Yeah.
Tebow's working up some things with that as well on some long form.
Speaking of ramming things down people's throat, I got a call this week from a telemarketer.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. You're on the no call list.
And he left his number, so I called him back. I said, sir, I'm on the do not call list.
Right.
Oh, really? Is that the national one or the local? I said, does it really matter?
Yeah.
He goes, well, no, I guess not. I think, are you an idiot?
Yeah.
Are you only, you know, I'll turn him in.
All right. I forward mine to the Attorney General's office.
Do you really?
Forward all those messages to
him. Good. Well, actually, I've got the guy's number. What I'd love to do is call him back right during dinner time, possibly right around maybe 9 o'clock or so. That'd be great.
Oh, sure.
Let's do that after the show. Good idea. Richard Kirschenbaum on the way and The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We are coming back in just a minute, and Richard will be with us.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
I love her.
I feel light as a breeze.
I love her.
I've got Liverpool tea. She loves me.
She puts me at ease.
She
I don't think Cole Haan ever made Liverpool teas. Well, they might have. Who knows?
Right.
Exactly. Ray Shillings and Brett Forsyth on the Advertising Show with our special guest this hour and carryover from last hour. It's good to spend more time with Richard Kirschenbaum. In the year 2000, Richard was inducted into the Advertising Hall of Achievement along with being the recipient of the Jack Everett Volunteer Spirit Award. Richard has been nominated in Crain's 40 Under 40 and placed at number 2 on the list of the top 100 entrepreneurs of the United States for the Young Entrepreneurs Organization Award. My goodness, he must have gone to a lot of dinners and had lots of roast beef and
chicken,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rubber chicken, right.
So, Richard, it's good to have you on the show, and thanks for staying with us for the second hour.
Sure.
You know, last hour we were talking about the famous and legendary George Lois. George and I were talking several weeks ago, maybe even a few months ago, and he was mentioning, didn't know that we were going to be having you on the show, Richard, but he was mentioning Esquire magazine and Kenneth Cole was being interviewed, and I'll have to clean this up for what George told me because we'd be knocked off the air here, Ray.
Yeah,
But he, and of course, George is a very colorful person when he expresses himself.
Colorful, that's true.
Yes.
Fluorescent.
But he mentioned that when interviewing Kenneth Cole, Esquire magazine, Kenneth was talking about his marketing success with his products, and George was very upset because he said there was no mention of Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners, and although your agency was very involved in and really putting Kenneth Cole on the map, wouldn't you say?
I would say.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that article?
Yes. You know, I mean, truthfully, I'll just say delicately because I'm not one to get into this whole kind of thing, but we're in a business of making other people look good, mm-hmm. and sometimes we make them look so good they think
they did it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So, but listen, I'm happy for everyone's success, and everyone. Kenneth is a brilliant, smart, talented guy, and the association that we had with him for 7 years was wonderful, and I'm very proud of the work we did.
So speaking of people feeling all important, what's your opinion of Donny Deutsch?
Well, I used to work for Donny Deutsch.
Did you?
Donny Deutsch was the first creative person that Donny hired when he was taking over the firm from his dad, and I love Donny. Donny is my big brother in the advertising industry. Mm-hmm. He is very charismatic. He is really smart. He is enormously successful, and I've learned a lot from him. He's, you know, I've been very lucky. I've had the experience of really surrounding myself with the brightest and the best of all ages, from Jerry Delfamina, George Lois, Donny. I mean, it's been incredible for me to interact with these guys, and you know, and Lois Corey, and you know, women as well. I mean, it's just been a fantastic part of my career has been to get to know the best.
And you can only hope that some of that rubs off on you. I was very impressed that when we interviewed Donny, which I don't think a lot of people would admit to this, he mentioned that, and these are his words, not ours, that he was a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, and that he had come up through the agency business from his father's background and firm. And I didn't really realize at that time that Deutsch existed before Donny. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, at that very moment, I think Ray and I mentioned to Donny that we were both members of the Lucky Sperm Club, but it had nothing to do with our parents. And we were going to explain that, but we ran out of time, and we're probably running out of time right now.
Yeah, we're out of time, Brad.
But I was going to ask you, is there anything happening in the media landscape today that you find particularly interesting, Richard?
Yes. I mean, I think there are so many things that are happening right now. I think TiVo is so interesting. I think their whole idea of embedded commercials are very interesting. We're taking a look at that all the time. I think that it's, you know, in my opinion, it's sort of, you know, the best of times, the worst of times. I mean, you know, the advertising landscape is so difficult, and on the other hand, it's the most exciting time we've ever had and the best our business has ever done. So I'm having a ball.
Mm-hmm. Ray's writing that line down. He thinks it's an opening of a book he's working on.
Yeah, I know. I heard it somewhere, right?
Yeah. So is TiVo, do you think, as big of a threat to the traditional 30-second spot as some suggest?
Well, you know, George and I were on the cover of Wired in 1994, and it said, "Is advertising finally dead?" And I think that, and it was us, the Pillsbury Doughboy and George Lois, and we were kind of being zapped with zappers a la the French Foreign Legion. And I think that in those days, they were predicting the death of the advertising industry, much like, you know, every time, whether it's the videos or, you know, TiVo. I mean, it's a crock. In my opinion, it's a fantastic product. People will always be interested in branding and commercials, and seeing great ads, and you know, if it's done correctly. And I, in my opinion, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, that, I agree. The, you know, every time a new technology comes along, whether you want to go back to television was supposed to change the movie industry and kill it. And, gosh, even MTV was supposed to kill the record industry.
Right.
It's actually
right.
helped the record industry.
Sure has.
At least back then it was. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about product placement. Television today and product placement, I think, you tell me, but was product placement more effective when Seinfeld would pull a box of cereal off of his shelf and set it on the table, as opposed to today where you have reality programs and you have a little bit more in-your-face product placement?
You know, well, I think consumers, in my opinion, are just smart enough to know when they're being oversold. And I just think sometimes, you know, I recently saw a movie. It was just so chock-block with product that it just, I mean, it just ruined the credibility of the movie. And I also think that, I mean, if you look at the way that brands have been built. I mean, you know, Dom Perignon was built through the, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, were built through the Bond movies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but it was done within style and with integrity and with certain, you know, elan. And I think that today it's just so crass. And like, you know, they, you know, people are holding up, you know, some product and you just know that they're holding it up because the producer is getting, you know, a fee for them to be there. And I think, it, you know, consumers, our cynical consumers, again, back to our book, realize it, they don't like it, and, you know, it starts to erode the brand if you don't do it correctly.
Mm-hmm. And back in the 90s, of course, speaking of Bond movies, BMW did a great job with launching the Z3, and they were, I think, in the forefront of doing that, and since then we've seen a lot of automotive product.
Yeah,
being
Ford Motor Company recently did that one, too.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if today integrating the automobile into a movie has lost its...
It depends. I mean, I thought that the Italian Job did a great job with Mini because it became part of the plot of the movie, and that's what makes great product placement.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's you know, on the surface, if it's something that's just being done because you can smell the dollars, then of course the consumer is going to react negatively because of it, and you're throwing your money out. So, I mean, for the most part, I'm in favor of it if it enhances the quality and the level of entertainment, and I'm opposed to it if it doesn't.
And I think The Restaurant recently, The Restaurant, which was aired on NBC, I believe, is a good example of, in my opinion, not really integrating much into the fabric of what you were seeing there. I thought it was a little bit over the top in terms of, you know, turning the clothes sign around and it has American Express written on it, or we need to get a small business loan through American Express.
Well, the same thing with What Not to Wear. They've got now, instead of giving them $5,000, they say, here's your Visa card with a $5,000 limit with
credit,
your name
yes,
on it. So.
Right.
I mean, I think Queer Eye for the Straight Guy is probably one of the few vehicles that does it right.
I agree.
You know, you really understand why they're taking you to a certain store, and they're really you get it, and it's great, and you enjoy it because you know it's so on the surface, and it's fantastic. I think for the most part, a lot of these reality shows are, you know, just abominable and have lowered the standard of American culture, but, you know, that's my opinion.
Well, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you if you have any client examples of product placement and maybe some experiences with that, and we'll do that just after the break.
And your opinion's okay on the show. That's why you're on. That's a good thing, okay?
Okay.
Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman of Kirschenbaum Bond & Partners, talking to Richard out of New York this weekend with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We've got the Wacky World of Marketing. Talking about integration, actually brand placement or product placement, we've got a Borowitz feature coming up later on this hour, just about that, with Britney Spears and product placement to the next level, okay? So with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, remember our website, theadvertisingshow.com, and we'll continue in just a minute.
For the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our Wacky Update heads to Brazil, where Ana Nova reports a Brazilian woman is suing a TV station for the trauma she suffered after being caught up in a reconstruction of a kidnapping. Ingrid Nichols from Sao Paulo thought it was a real incident and crashed her car into a truck as she tried to escape. She told the local newspaper how she panicked after seeing two armed motorcyclists try to take a passerby as a hostage. She said, "I was in total panic for minutes. We live in a violent country, you know. What was I to think? There was no sign whatsoever this was a filming." The TV station said they are willing to compensate Ms. Nichols, although an agreement has still to be reached as of press time. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
The Del Monte tomato sauce, sir. Shall I ring it up?
Yes, thank you.
14 cans.
Yes, they're great Christmas stocking stuffers.
Christmas?
Oh, I know I'm rushing the season, but those green Del Monte cans and the bright red tomatoes, handsome, inexpensive.
I see, and then you use them for the cooking afterwards.
Cooking?
Sir, Del Monte tomato sauce is meant for cooking.
Not just for nice red and green Christmas.
On The Advertising Show, it's Ray Schillins along with Brad Forsyth. That sounds almost like a Dick and Burke concept mm-hmm. spot, doesn't it?
I agree.
I'm not sure that it is, but either way, Del Monte, a great spot. And we are happy to have Richard Kirschenbaum on the show today, co-chairman of Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners.
So any clients, Richard, before the break, I was going to ask you, any clients that you have currently or most recently have been involved in product placement?
Of course. I mean, one of the big things that we're working on right now is something called cross-brand promotion, where you actually take the power of two brands together to define and create a halo effect over both brands. So recently we did a program with Stolichnaya, launching Stoli for Christmas of the holidays last year, and Dion van Furstenberg, the great designer, you know, who created a Stoli fashion show and created a signature print for wrapping paper and also the couture dresses that were auctioned off at her studio. And it was just fantastic. And I think that, you know, you can do so much. I just think that the idea of sticking a brand somewhere just because someone thinks they're going to see it has very little relevance in today's environment, because brands are everywhere, so what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it with style and you do it with grace and you do it the right way, then it's fantastic.
So Stoli and the fashion product that you mentioned, are both of those your clients? Or
Stoli is a client of Lime, our public relations and promotions company, mm-hmm. and they wanted to do a tie-in with the fashion community. And, of course, Dion van Furstenberg is an old friend and fantastic and one of the most revered women in fashion,
mm-hmm.
a real icon, and wanted to do it, and you know, it created a stir, and we wrapped a building with the signature Stoli Diane fabric and the wrapping paper, and it was a great success.
So I want to get your take on celebrity endorsements. Shift gears here a little bit.
Sure.
You know, it's been said no one ever got fired for hiring Tiger Woods as a spokesperson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to go play golf with the guy, and you get all those good things. But on the other hand, we've asked often here on The Advertising Show, do people really believe that Tiger Woods drives a Buick Rendezvous? Of course, we know the Buick Open and the tie-in there, but when you see Tiger Woods there in front of a Buick Rendezvous, and of course there's a Learjet behind him, which is a reminder of whether he really... My theory has always been, not only does Tiger Woods not drive a Rendezvous, his caddy doesn't drive a Rendezvous either, but his gardener does.
Mom and Dad do.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, you know what, honestly, if he doesn't drive a Rendezvous, he really shouldn't be endorsing it. I mean, there has to be a certain level of credibility, and I think, you know, certainly Tiger Woods is successful enough and makes enough money that he doesn't need to do an endorsement for a product that he doesn't like, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully you would think that he does it, you know, and I would assume that he does. I mean, we all think that he doesn't, but perhaps he does, you know. If he doesn't, he shouldn't.
Right.
That's my opinion.
Right. I agree with you, and I think a lot of people out there, when they – well, look at Britney Spears. Wasn't she slammed for drinking some Coke, and she was promoting Pepsi?
Look at Britney Spears. I mean,
well, there you go.
Okay, let's do that then.
Poster back.
There we go. Here in the Houston market, Hakeem Olajuwon was a spokesperson for a Chevy dealer, right?
Right.
He drives a Mercedes.
Right. Exactly.
Like, go figure.
First of all, you couldn't fit in a Chevy, most Chevys.
No.
But, well, I think a lot of people would be interested, Richard, in knowing what the co-chairman and chief creative officer of a big-time ad agency like your own, a little life and times of Richard Kirschenbaum. What's a typical week for you, and what's your role at your agency?
Well, I would tell you that, you know, besides reviewing every piece of creative work that comes out of this agency and leading the troops and, you know, making sure, you know, I do a little bit of everything. You know, I'm very involved in the creative of every specific, network company, and making sure that we have the right people and that they're, you know, and getting very involved, very hands-on. But I must tell you that a lot of what I do is something that a lot of people don't do, and that is, you know, I go out. I go out a lot. I mean, my wife and I, you know, are always going out with clients, with, you know, going to events. I mean, it's a skill personally that I have, and I think, you know, part of my raison d'etre, I would say, as in terms of being a co-chairman, and that's my co-chairman role hat taking in here, is to really have a relationship with my clients, and I pride myself on my great relationships.
Well,
and part of what we do is entertain,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's getting to know them, and that's how you build trust with clients, and that's how you sell great work.
Well, and I was going to say, I think relationships and the building of relationships are critical in the agency-client arena, don't you think?
Well, you know, clients look at the agency as glamorous. I mean, you know, we're not high on the glamour ladder, but we're on the glamour ladder. And I think that for the most part, we live in New York, and out-of-town clients who come into New York, they don't necessarily or always, you know, they want to be in a creative business. They want to see the, you know, they're interested in seeing culture and trends, and we're sort of at the forefront of that. And they're also love going to, you know, museum openings and mm-hmm. to premieres and to, you know, fashion shows. And so we have access to all of that. And so therefore, you know, we can give our clients that little bit of edge of that glamorous world that they may not have, you know, if they live, you know, in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so very often another thing that I do is I take my clients on culture and trend days, my important clients, to let them know what's happening and what will be happening.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, and you can get them VIP passes to Letterman, and you don't have to stand in line.
Of course.
Excuse me.
And, you know, get to meet some people that they ordinarily wouldn't get to meet.
Right.
But I think a lot of it is business related.
Well, I agree. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, what do you see as some of the major challenges facing the ad agency, ad industry today?
Well, first of all, I think boring is probably one of the biggest things that I see facing the advertising industry today. I mean,
Richard, let's take a break here for just a minute on the advertising show. It's Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth, and we will come right back.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
There's just one Schlitz, yeah, nothing else comes near. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. Just one beer fits, yeah, this great one here. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of
here. Well, after all, it is the weekend, right? There we go. On the advertising show, Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth and our special guest, Richard Kirschenbaum. We had to take a kind of a quick break there, but let's get back into that question that you asked, and let's get some more answers.
Yeah, sorry we had to cut you off there, Richard. I was asking about the major challenges facing the advertising industry today, and you led off with the headline boring, and you were talking a little bit about that. Follow up with that, if you would, please.
Well, you know, we're in a creative business, and a lot of people forget that. A lot of clients forget it. A lot of agencies forget it. A lot of people in the industry forget it. And it's unforgivable. I mean, we're here to excite. We're here to create. And, you know, I take pride in the fact that KMB is, you know, has produced some of the great creative minds. You know, we have people like Kate and Andy Spade, who started their brand within the walls of KMB, now successful designers, and people like Marisa Acasella, who is my original partner, who's now one of the leading New Yorker cartoonists. I mean, people like that, people who are on the leading edge, are creating. You know, we have a think tank here of great people, and you know what? I'm not one to think that the industry is just dependent on either a good economy or a bad economy. I think the industry is dependent on great ideas. And mm-hmm. if you don't have great ideas and you're a creative person, you shouldn't be in the business.
Well, do you think advertising holding companies, the big Goliaths they are that, you know, handle so many or are responsible for so many ad agencies and their bottom line, are the ad agencies today just spending too much time looking at Wall Street and not willing to?
Of course. I mean, they've created their own monster and most of the and it's a disaster for our clients. It's a disaster. I mean, when I got into the business, there were you had agencies that reflected the brand of the people, the stars who ran them. People like Jay Shiat, people like George Lois, people like Jerry Delafamina, people like, you know, Carl Alley. And, I mean, people who reflected the brands. You know, you know, there are people behind DDB, you know. There's a Dane, there's a Doyle, you know, there's a Burnback. And, you know, although those some of those people aren't alive anymore, there are, you know, even today, the people behind the brands aren't front and center the way they used to be, and that's a shame for creativity.
Mm-hmm. So in new business pitches, I think Lee Clow, a TBWA Shy Day, has been quoted as saying it's demeaning that agencies have to put on a show to prove that they know how to put on a show, and then, of course, in many cases you have to give away your ideas or give a sense of your concepts, and you do that free of charge as well. What's your thoughts on the creative?
I mean, I hold Lee in high regard, as everyone in the creative community does, but I disagree with him. We're in the business of putting on a show, and you know, I'm in some ways an entertainer, and when people come into my agency, they need to be excited and created, and they need to be entertained, and they need to be stimulated, and you know what, and we're here to do that. And I think that we have to have a little bit of Barnum and Bailey in us all in the industry, and if we don't, again, you get back to what I think is the death knell, which is boring.
Mm-hmm. Conservative, safe style type of advertising that we see can be traced back to publicly held ad agencies?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes from the era in which, for example, the 1960s were all about, or the 50s were all about the USP, I'm sorry, the 50s, you know, the unique selling proposition, which was really invented by Ted Bates. And in its day, it was wonderful because there were only three networks, and, you know, you just heard, you know, builds, you know, bones stronger, like Wonder Bread, and, you know, over and over again, and you bought Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
But the world has changed so much today. It's too fragmented, and you really need to stand out. And I think it's about energizing, it's about innovating, it's about creating, and that's the business we chose to be in. So, and I love the business. So I think that putting on a great show and getting out there and getting our clients, you know, jazzed up is one of the reasons why we're doing well.
So,
you know?
As we wrap this interview up, we have just less than a minute left. What's the biggest obstacle, Richard, to creating great advertising?
The biggest obstacle to creating great advertising, well, I always say that clients get the work they deserve. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have great clients and they get great work. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think unusually, an unusual amount of good clients are attracted to this agency. And that's great, and they get great work.
So I guess the answer to who's responsible for mediocre advertising, the client or the agency, you would say?
Oh, many agencies are too, because they just can't push themselves. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
We both have culpability.
So before we leave, read any great advertising books lately?
I prefer not to read advertising books.
Mm-hmm.
I think that gets into the land of boring, even though I've written one myself. I like reading books that are outside the realm, and I like reading. I'm a voracious reader, but I'm not one to dwell on where we are. I get inspiration from museum exhibits, and I mean, I don't think it's about focusing on who we are. I think it's about looking outward and then taking it all inward.
Richard, thanks for being on the show today, The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and Richard Kirschenbaum, co-chairman of Kirschenbaum, Bond & Partners. Go to KB.com for ever more info. Thanks, Richard.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
B.J. Thomas.
There's a whole new way of living. Pepsi helps supply the drive. It's got a lot to give to those who like to live, 'cause Pepsi helps them come alive.
Well, those jingles have changed a little bit over the years, haven't they?
Mm.
That's in glorious mono, by the way.
It is.
Yeah.
And that was back when BJ had hair on his head.
He still does.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just guessing.
No, I think he still does.
He does?
Yeah, too much hair.
He's got, yeah,
he's got
right.
The long thing going in the back, the whatever it's called.
Yeah, well, I know what it's called.
Yeah, shoot. Anyway, good talking to Richard. Good advice, too, and definitely a guy we can learn a few things from. Hope you did, too.
Well, I did.
Okay.
I learned he's a great guy. He knows a lot of the same people we know from being here on the show, and he's not shy to admit the people that have influenced him along his career.
Next week, we've got Linda Kaplan Thaler, co-author of Boing or Bang.
Bang. Are you talking with
Boing,
the Lisp?
Bang. No, Boing, bang.
Yeah.
Bing, bang, bang. CEO and COO of the Kaplan Thaler Group.
Yeah, I think you're talking with the Lisp. Were you reading something earlier about holding the paper far away? Or was that Mary? That was Mary Lou talking about that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, exactly.
Yeah, I had to do my renew my driver's license.
Did you?
Yeah, and what I was thinking before I went in there, I thought, you know, when you're standing on that little line and they say, okay, step forward, you need to do your eye test.
I was going
to say, no, I'm okay from here. I'll just read it from here. And then, no, bring your face forward. You need to stick it on these goggles. So anyway, what happened was I decided I was going into that little piece that you put your face on.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I'm just going to go not quite the full distance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pitch dark. And I'm going, my God, I'm night blind. And so I looked a little, and then I thought, well, I've got to go a little closer because I'm not seeing this.
Right.
And what it ends up happening is it's only when you press your face against.
You have to lean up
against
it.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Well, and then
how often do we do this?
Well, and then
after
you press your face on it, and I thought, my goodness, I have four columns to read. I thought it was going to be like one.
Yeah.
And I zipped through it real fast and read it as fast as I could, thinking she wasn't going to pay attention.
She did.
And then after I walked out of there and I went to this other section and then I had to do the thumbprint.
They did a thumbprint.
Yeah,
for you?
Now you have to do a thumbprint, and you do.
I didn't have to do a thumbprint.
Well, it's not an ink thing; it's an electronic deal.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Put your thumbprint on.
Right.
And then after I left, I'm driving away, and I'm going. My face has the germs of thousands of people that press their face up. Why don't they give you a towelette?
I don't know.
Of some sort.
No, it's a bad business.
KFC gives you a towelette, don't they?
Speaking of KFC, we'll talk about that. They had to pull their ads, by the way. Did you hear about that?
Mm.
Okay, let's listen to Andy Borowitz first.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
In what industry experts are calling the most aggressive marketing campaign in the history of the music business, Pop-Tart Britney Spears' face appeared this past week on the head of fellow chart-topping singer Christina Aguilera. Miss Spears, whose face has appeared on magazine covers, billboards, and even city buses to promote her new CD, In the Zone, is known for her relentless self-promotion, but few observers expected her to land her face on Christina Aguilera, including Miss Aguilera herself. I woke up and looked in the mirror and I was like, hey, what's that on my face? Miss Aguilera told reporters this past week. The girl knows how to work it, for sure. Miss Spears' marketing team confirmed that their client's face might soon appear on the heads of other prominent singers such as Madonna, Avril Lavigne, and Clay Aiken. If Miss Spears' efforts pay off, the new strategy of face placement could turn out to be the logical successor to the 90s fad of product placement, says Dr. David Kremens of the University of Minnesota's Lawrence Tate School of Advertising. With all the clutter in the marketplace, Christina Aguilera's head becomes a very valuable piece of real estate, Dr. Kremens said. In other news, Pentagon sources said the voice of the latest tape attributed to Saddam Hussein is, in fact, the Iraqi strongman's, but that the face on the tape resembles Britney Spears. On the tape, the former dictator urges Iraqis to rise up against the infidel and also to purchase my awesome new CD, In the Zone.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
You know, that could be real, though, too.
It could.
Yeah, but it's not.
Face placement.
Face placement, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. Kentucky Fried Chicken. The Federal Trade Commission responded to a complaint that KFC ads currently on the air are deceptive. Kentucky Fried Chicken. The chicken chain has instructed its local and national agencies to immediately discontinue the spots for brand protection reasons, according to executives close to the situation. And what they're saying, the ads are part of the KFC campaign to position its fried chicken as part of a healthy diet. So on October 29th, it says KFC broke a two-spot effort with a tagline, "You've got a KFC, what's cooking?" from the new agency, and now they're off the air.
Who is the? Whoops. Does it say who the new agency is?
Yeah, Inter Republic Foot Cone Building.
Inter Republic.
Yeah.
You know, a two-spot effort, and then probably two spots, and that was it, huh?
That's it. That's it. Bye-bye. Hey, we're out of time. I can't believe that.
It sure flies.
It does. Next week, it's Linda Kaplan Thayer. And she'll be on the advertising show. And we'll laugh at that point again, I'm sure.
No, we'll be straight by then.
We better. Yeah. Boy, we'll be in deep trouble then.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed the show today and hope you can come back next week and join us as well. The advertising show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Stay in touch throughout the week at theadvertisingshow.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, and we'll see you next week.